want your soul.
It was a night like any other night. I had barely arrived at the ranger station, and there were already four calls of vacationers' homes getting broken into. Out here in the West Virginia Wildlife Preserve, people tend to think that just because they plant some houses, that the animals should somehow know and respect boundaries. That's kind of tough when the animals are on a huge plot of land where they've never been hunted, and never even been threatened by anything other than a bigger animal. Folks seem to think that this is a great vacation spot for them. What they don't realize is it's also a great vacation spot for the animals, too. I hopped in the company truck and started toward my destination of the night. An elderly couple had been terrorized by a deer that literally broke in through a sliding glass door. They managed to trap it inside a room and needed someone to go release it. I was the one that was elected. When I got there, the vacationers looked like the ones caught in headlights. They were still wide-eyed. I could tell they were in shock. I had them go into another room and close the door. Once they were out of the way, I found the closet door to the outside and opened it. Then I went to the room with the deer in it. I slowly opened the door and was shocked to find the room completely covered in blood. The deer was laying on the floor, panting. I approached it slowly, circling around to leave the doorway open, hoping to give it an escape route. The closer I got, the more I realized this deer wasn't going anywhere. Its side was covered with claw marks. At first I thought a coyote had attacked it, but the marks were too far apart. They were large enough to be caused by a bear, but the individual claws were way too far apart. I'd never seen anything like this. If I had to compare it for something, I'd say Freddy Krueger sliced it up. The deer's eyes went wide when I approached it, but it didn't jump and run. I took this as a bad sign. Its breath came in ragged gasps as I struggled to roll it over. Once I did, it was my turn to struggle breathing. Its entire side was torn to shreds, but that wasn't the worst part. There were large chunks that were missing. I examined the wounds and found bite marks, where the missing flesh should have been, but the bites were huge. If it wouldn't have challenged the laws of nature as well as my own sanity, I would have said it was bitten by a shark. Blood poured out of the side, and the deer struggled to draw breaths. I stood and left the room, leaving the poor creature the dignity of a private death. When I went back in, it was still. It was dead. I took pictures of it with my cell phone and tried my best to carry the creature out without making more of a mess. After I got it loaded on the back of my truck, I went back inside and talked to the vacationers. When I opened the door to the room they were in, the woman's eyes grew wide and she started screaming. The man's eyes were the size of saucers as well. I approached them slowly with my arms outstretched to try to calm them down, and it seemed to have the opposite effect. They started climbing the furniture and clawing at the walls to get away from me. I decided to back away and give them a little bit of room. "What's wrong?" I said, and the man pointed a shaky finger at me. You're covered in blood," he said. "The deer got you," the woman shouted. "You've got rabies. Or worse," the man said, keeping his distance. "I'm sorry, folks," I said. "This is the deer's blood." "You killed it just for breaking in," the woman said. "What? No, ma'am, it was already injured. I just took it to the back of my truck." The couple then seemed to settle down and considered this for a second. "So you don't have any rabies then?" the man said, looking me up and down. "Or any other wildlife diseases?" the woman replied, hiding behind her husband. "No, ma'am, I'm fine. I'm okay. This is just the deer's blood. I got the deer out of here and I put it in the back of my truck. That's all." She took her turn eyeing me up and down, I assumed, looking for wounds. Being satisfied, they asked the one question I didn't want to answer. "So, what killed the deer?" the man asked. I really don't know," I said truthfully. Having just gotten them calmed down, I didn't want to send them back into panic. "It was probably just a coyote." "A coyote," the man said, diving back into the pool of panic. "Or a bear," I said, trying and failing to calm them down. "A bear," the woman said, diving into her husband. "You know, folks, you've had a traumatic night. I can't tell you what to do, but if I were you, I'd..." "We're leaving," the woman said, dragging her husband out of the room. "Well, that sounds like a good idea." And then, like an idiot, I added, "I hope you enjoyed your stay." They either didn't hear me or completely ignored me. Either way, it wasn't long until I heard a car start then roar away from the house. I went back into the room where the deer had been trapped and started working backwards from there, trying to find out what had happened. It wasn't hard to pick up the trail. It had been bleeding badly. Seeing the bites and claw marks made that fairly obvious. I tracked back through the kitchen and out the smashed glass door. Once outside, I turned on my flashlight. The trail was a little harder to follow, but not much. I could still see drops of blood beside its tracks as I followed them back toward the pond behind the house. I approached the pond and saw signs of a struggle. This must have been where the deer was attacked. There were other tracks in with the deer's, but they didn't make sense to me. They were large, too large, and their shape was odd as well. If I had to call them anything, I would have called them duck prints, but massive, larger than any duck I've ever seen. A giant duck with shark teeth? I think I'll leave that out of my report, I thought. It suddenly struck me what the tracks were. It was a man with swim fins on his feet. But why? Why go to all that trouble to poach a deer when you can just knock it out with a tranquilizer gun? My mind sent me an answer, but I didn't like it. What if this man is a psychopath, just getting his kicks by killing an animal with his bare hands? I thought about the mental hospital in the neighboring county and wondered if one of their patients had taken an unsanctioned leave of absence, and they were trying to keep it quiet. I didn't like that one bit either. It also meant we had someone who might suddenly get a taste for killing. Doing this to animals was horrible, but what if he decided to go after something bigger? I took a shot at the house, wondering how many vacationers were within a short walk from this spot and how many were armed. As I contemplated the safety of the people in the area, I heard something behind me. I whipped around and shone my light, but saw nothing. I scanned the pond and saw a ripple emanating from the middle. It was probably just a fish jumping, I thought. I took some more pictures of the struggle area with my phone, then started back towards my truck. I had more calls to answer, and this riddle would have to wait. I drove halfway around the lake, around 3 miles, to the other vacation home where a break-in had been reported. When the woman in her 30s answered the door, she took a step back. "Oh my," she said, looking at the dried blood all over my uniform. "Good evening, ma'am. Sorry about my appearance," I said. "Did you report a break-in?" Yes, we did. Please come in," she said in a friendly tone, yet gave me a wide berth while closing the door. She led me upstairs to the kitchen. For some reason, I was expecting to find blood all over like the last house. However, this was a completely different mess. She showed me the door. It had been forced open, but not shattered like the last one. There was only a small amount of glass broken. Then, the door latch had been unlocked, and the door slid open. There were faint images of my giant duck tracks like the last house, and my spine turned to ice. This house was over 3 miles away from the other house. There were many more people in that space that might have fallen victim to this crazed individual. The woman then showed me the rest of the kitchen and the mess that had been left. There were a few cans of sardines that had been opened and eaten, and also some cans of tuna fish. The strange thing was how they were opened. The cans had been torn into with something sharp, but not a can opener. The marks looked like they were torn open with claws. I shuddered to imagine the amount of strength it took to do something like that, and then I spotted it. Beside one of the cans of tuna was a small puddle of blood. "Ma'am, could I trouble you for a sandwich bag?" I said. She handed me one, and I carefully tried to scrape as much blood into it as possible. I sealed it and then put it in my pocket, and then I went out through the broken door. Behind the house, just like with most of these vacation houses, was a pond. I traced the tracks back to it and they disappeared at the waterline. I shone my light over the water, but the only thing I saw was a stray turtle. I stared at it for a long time as though it would somehow give me a clue as to what was going on. "What do you think we should do?" the woman asked, nearly scaring me half to death. I hadn't heard her follow me out the door and into the backyard. "I'm going to send somebody around to look at that door in the morning," I said. "In the meantime, it might not be a bad idea to sleep in a room that has a lock on the door. I'm sure they won't be back tonight, but just in case." She didn't seem very comforted by that idea, but thanked me as I left. The next two reports were just teenagers breaking in and stealing beer. That was it. No bloody wildlife, no weird tracks, just kids being kids. I went back to the station, changed out of my bloody uniform, and spent the rest of the night filling out reports on what had happened. When my shift was over and I passed on what had happened, I took a little trip to the neighboring county. I stopped in at the mental hospital and asked if they had any escapes lately. The nurse looked at me like I had asked her if she was wearing any deodorant. "We don't have escapes," she said with obvious pride that showed his arrogance. I thanked her and left, feeling less than satisfied with her answer. Next, I stopped in at the local police department and asked one of my friends on the force if they could analyze the blood sample for me. I shared my thoughts that there might be an escapee from the mental hospital and the blood sample might help us find out who and track them down. Hours went by and it was well past noon until I got to bed. That night, when I got into work, it was pandemonium all over again. There had been more break-ins, and people were starting to really panic. The owner of the resort was frantic, too. People were canceling left and right and wanting their money back. When I walked in, he stormed his pudgy face right into mine. "You told people to go home?" he fumed, glaring up at me. "No, I mean, I merely suggested..." Then he interrupted me. "Do you want to pay their rental out of your salary?" he said. "I work for the state, not you," I shot back. He turned a deeper shade of red. "Would you rather see people in body bags instead of animals?" I said. Then I continued. "That wouldn't do much for business now, would it?" He turned fire engine red and stormed out mumbling. "Yeah, we'll see about that." That night, I invested 5 break-ins. Only 2 of them were legit. The rest seemed like half-hearted attempts to stage a break-in so they could get out of paying for the rental. The 2 real ones shared the same characteristics as before, just enough of a broken window to open the door. They took cans of whatever seafood was available. They even got the shrimp out of the freezer. Everything about the way the intruder acted pointed to a person. All I needed to know was who it was. And again, I followed the tracks back to the nearby pond. I stood for a long time studying the surface of the water. I knew these ponds were all designed the same. A roughly 40-yard by 40-yard body of water around 5 feet deep in the middle, stocked mostly with bluegill for catch-and-release fishing. Anyone using these ponds to hide would have to be holding their breath for inhuman periods of time. I stared at the surface for 20 minutes and thought that if someone was out there, they had an invisible snorkel or an extra set of lungs. After my rounds of investigating and reporting, I decided to stick around and do a little extra investigating. I ran home, grabbed my swim trunks, masks, and snorkel. Then, I decided to go to the site of the most recent break-in. I got in the pond and waded out into the water, unsure of what I would find when a snake slithered past me. I let it go and waded deep enough to where I could swim. I hovered at the level of the surface, dipping my mask underwater to get a glimpse of whatever there was to see, and there wasn't much. Fish, underwater plants, and lots of water. Just what you would expect from a pond. As I kept going towards the middle, the water was getting a little deeper. So I decided to float on the surface to get a good view. Looming in front of me was a dark spot on the bottom of the pond. I took it for a rock, but swam close enough to investigate anyways. In for a penny, in for a pound, I thought. As I drew close enough to hover over it, I realized it wasn't a rock. I took a deep breath and dove to find out what it was. I kept going and going, swimming further down and further down, and then light disappeared. I was sure I had been swimming straight down for a solid minute without touching the bottom, which was very odd because these ponds weren't supposed to be that deep. I turned and looked up. The surface of the pond was only a pinprick of light now, and my lungs screamed at me to turn around. I had no choice but to comply. I clawed at the water in desperation to get back, to get to the surface. It seemed like I was swimming in mud or something was pulling me down, though. Almost like a force or current pushing against me, wanting me to drown before I could fully explore this hidden secret. After what felt like an eternity, I finally broke the surface of the water and gasped for air. I swam over to the shallows and walked out of the pond. I collapsed on the shore and lay there for a long time trying to regain my breath. As my brain received oxygen, I thought about what had happened and if it had been real, an illusion, or if I had just gotten turned around somehow and stuck at the bottom. I needed to find out quickly. I wasted no time driving 2 counties over and renting some more dive equipment, along with a light. This time I was armed, and I returned to the pond and walked toward the middle again. This time, when I dove towards the dark spot, I was able to see exactly what it was. I used a flashlight to examine the darkness, and as I swam deeper, the sides closed in on me as if I was swimming down the gullet of some massive fish. I've never been claustrophobic before, but the pond was rapidly changing. I barely had any room to maneuver as the sides closed in. I contemplated turning around, but there was no room. I could feel myself start to panic, and I had to focus to keep my breaths regular. I was very close to a panic attack when suddenly the tunnel opened up again. This time the sides grew further apart. I checked my watch and realized that I had been underwater for 15 minutes now. The sides of this tunnel had spread out so far that they were barely visible and I could see a light ahead of me, and I swam towards it, desperate to get out. I broke through the surface and looked around, and I was in the pond still. I swam to the side until I could stand and walked out to the shore. Looking around, I made a startling discovery. I was in a pond, but it was different. It was the same one as the break-in last night. Somehow, there was a hidden tunnel between the ponds. That's how the robber never gets caught. He just swims to the next pond, slick as snot, no fuss, no muss, and goes from one pond to the next. Aha! I now knew what's going on here. But I needed to know more because that wasn't everything, and I needed to know who was doing this. As tempting as it was to swim back through the tunnel, I was still a little shaken and didn't want to risk an underwater panic attack. I walked back to my truck, took off my dive equipment, and drove back to the dive shop. I asked about frequent customers, especially for refilling tanks. Whoever did this needed some serious equipment. They told me they had a few regulars that came in every weekend, but no one new, and no one who needed a refill more than once a week. I asked if there were any other dive shops in the area, and they told me the next closest one was over 100 miles away. I ended up going home pretty frustrated. This wasn't making sense. This person would need air to swim back and forth and back and forth through those tunnels, as that was the escape route. I was sure of it. I tried to sleep through the afternoon, but my mind wouldn't let me rest. It was working on the impossible puzzle of how this robber was getting air. I borrowed a couple trail cams and set one up at each pond. I needed to see if he had some new tank system or what, but I also wanted to identify him and shut him down quickly. I made sure to stay away from those ponds that night so he would feel free to do his thing. In the morning, I gathered the cameras and took them home. I downloaded both memory cards before watching the videos, and just as the second download was finished, my phone rang. "Hello," I said. "Hey John, it's Steve. I got the results from that blood you gave me the other day." "Great," I said, hitting the play button on my computer. "Were you able to get a match in any hospital records?" "Not exactly," he said. "Okay, well, why not?" I asked the question as a ghostly green image appeared on my computer video. The image was blurred, but it was definitely the size of a man walking upright towards the camera. I clicked to the next side and froze at what I saw. "Well, the thing is, the blood you gave me came back as reptile DNA," he said into the phone. I registered the words he said in my mind, just like I registered the image on my computer screen, but I just couldn't place them in reality. "Are you there, John?" he said. Yeah, I'm here. I'm sorry. Could you send me a copy of your findings to the office? I need a record of it." "Sure, no problem." "Thanks, I appreciate it. You really helped me figure this out," I said. "Anytime," he said cheerfully before hanging up. I hadn't taken my eyes off the computer screen the entire time. No matter how long I stared at this, I couldn't make my mind acknowledge it as real. Standing there, large as life, was not a man in a wetsuit, it was a creature. I could see the wide mouth full of sharp teeth that looked exactly like the ones that bit the deer. I could see the webbed feet that looked like swim fins, only they had claws sticking out of the front where toes would be. And I saw the razor-sharp claws of its webbed hands. It was a full-on nightmare standing in front of me. I sat back in my chair and thought for a long time. Then I printed copies of the images and put them in an envelope. I rushed to the station to share my information I had with my fellow rangers. As I was showing them, their faces ranged in emotions from shock to disbelief to outright mocking me. As I was going through my investigation, the owner of the timeshares then walked in. "What are we looking at?" he said and eyed me with contempt. Well, it seems that John has solved the case of the break-ins," one of the rangers said. The owner then approached. He picked up the lab report and read it, and then stared for a long time at the picture. "Do you know what this is?" he said absently. I really don't know yet. I've never seen anything like it. I'm trying to figure that out now." He turned to me and smiled. "This is money," he said, holding up the picture. "What? What do you mean?" I said. "These idiots that go around hunting, what do they call them? Cryptids?" Yeah, cryptids. They'll pay through the nose if they think they can find something like this. And then there's the TV shows and merchandising. You may have saved my financial hide. We've been struggling here, and now all of a sudden we have a real-life water cryptid hiding in our forests." He was beaming at me now. "No, man, I don't think you understand. This is a dangerous animal. If you had seen what it did to that deer..." Then he shouted and interrupted me. "So what do you want to do? You want to hunt it down and kill it?" he asked. "Well, I don't know if we need to kill it, but definitely tranquilize it and take it out to a secure location where it can't hurt anybody." "Oh, you dumb son of a bitch," he yelled. "I could take a mint. I wouldn't even have to repair those houses. They would all rush in to investigate and leave piles of cash in my bank account," he explained. "But what about the people, though?" "Who cares about the people?" he said. "Throw them all out. I've got the chance of a lifetime beating down my front door, and you want to flush it down the toilet because you're scared somebody might break a nail?" He was breathing hard and standing up into my face now. The air was charged with fury, his and mine, and then a sudden calm came over him. "Charles," he said, addressing the lead ranger, "isn't this a wildlife preserve?" Yes, it is, Charles said warily. And aren't the wildlife on this preserve protected from all tampering by law? Well, I guess they are, said Charles. And what if those animals present a threat? I said to Charles. How many deer were killed by coyotes on this preserve last year? He said. Dozens, Charles said. Were the coyotes removed from the preserve? No, they weren't. The owner turned and shot me a triumphant look. John, I know you have everybody's best interest in mind, but you're going to have to let this go. And I glared at him. Okay. And what happens when this thing decides it likes to eat humans? I said loudly, my voice raised so everybody could hear me. All the eyes in the room that had been on me suddenly found somewhere else to look, all but the owner, and he was smiling from ear to ear. I think that pudgy little bastard was about to break into the happy dance. I searched the room for any support but found none. I pulled my badge off my shirt, quietly laid it on the desk, and walked out. Afterwards, I took my pension and rented one of the houses on the preserve. The owner had leaked through social media that a cryptid had been spotted on the preservation, and he had guessed right, because the cryptid hunters and TV shows came in droves, renting everything on site. My goal was different, though. I already knew it existed. I knew how it got around without being detected as well. I stayed at one of the break-in houses every night, and I took a huge tuna I had bought fresh that morning and laid it out beside the pond. I sat in the dark living room and watched the first night as it approached the fish with more caution than curiosity. After sniffing it for a long time, it picked it up and then headed for the pond. Each night after, I laid out another fish, and the creature became less cautious. It was being fed, and the media frenzy was starving. The hunters had found nothing of it, but I knew where it was. There were no sightings of it as long as I kept feeding it. Everyone had their cameras set up looking for it, and the few that roamed around left me alone when they saw somebody in the house. I guess they thought I was another cryptid hunter and respected my privacy. As the number of sightings stayed at zero, they started turning on the owner, calling him a fraud, calling him a liar, and his reputation plummeted. After a week with no sightings, people started leaving the woods. In desperation, he did the wrong thing. He hired an actor to dress in a creature suit and roam around. Of course, at that, the hunters and TV crews saw right through this and destroyed what was left of his reputation. I had rented my house out for 2 weeks. Between the daily rent and the fish, my money was starting to run low. I had kept the people safe, but what would happen when I stopped feeding it? I had managed to clear out most of the people so they would feel safe, but what about my fellow rangers? What would happen when this thing became desperate? What would happen when the starving creature no longer had houses full of food to break into? I had 3 more nights left on my stay until I had to leave, and I was out of money. The preservation had completely become a ghost town. As far as I knew, I was the only renter left, and it was decision time. I sat staring at the large tuna on the table with a bottle of bleach next to it. Let it live and see what happens, or dump the bleach in this and kill it. I thought about this for a long time. Both options had merits and consequences. I chose a third option, a much more dangerous one. I took the fish out and laid it there where I usually did, then backed up a few feet and stood there. Over an hour passed before the water stirred, and I saw the head and eyes of the creature appear as it headed towards the fish. And then it stopped. It seen me. I made sure to keep still with my arms at my side. It slowly approached the bank and stood. It was a few feet away from me with the fish in between us. It studied me and sniffed the air, and then it became agitated. Perhaps it had smelled my scent before as a pursuer. It let out a soft hiss but bent down and took the fish, keeping its eyes on me the entire time. Then, once it ate its meal, it did the most incredible physical display I've ever seen. It leaped 20 feet in the air and landed in a perfect dive, right in the middle of the pond before leaving almost no splash. I let out a breath I didn't realize I'd been holding and collapsed to the ground shaking. Once I had recovered, I went back inside and fell into a fitful sleep. That was only part of my plan. The next night would decide who lived and who died. The following night, I did the exact same thing, but I had no fish. The creature got out of the pond, stepped up to me, and looked around for the fish, and I showed it my empty hands. It sniffed at them and growled, having smelled the scent of fish. It looked at my hands, and I wondered if it was going to bite them off as a substitute instead. It hissed at me and sniffed my face, and I saw it flexing its claws the entire time. I stared into its face, those massive razor-sharp teeth, and swallowed hard. I did everything I could to stay still, to show I was no threat, and my heart hammered in my chest the entire time. It opened its jaws and showed me those horrible teeth. Its breath was a horrid stench I had never smelled and hoped to never again. I closed my eyes, not knowing if they would ever open. Then, seconds fell to minutes, and I opened my eyes, and I was alone. He was gone. There wasn't even a ripple in the water, and I sighed. My decision had been made. It had shown restraint, and I would too. I went back inside to the rental, packed up my belongings, and left. I could only hope and pray that the people that remained, including my former co-workers, would be safe. I went home and slept restlessly. And in the morning, there was a report in the newspaper on a break-in at the wildlife preserve. They said the only thing that was taken were cans of tuna fish. Reading the article in the news, I smiled ruefully and wondered how long it would take to stay that way. If you're hearing this, don't go to the preserve looking for this thing. And if you see it, don't tell anybody else about it either. This cryptid is best left alone to roam the wildlife of the preserve and in the privacy of its own ponds. This is John Christensen, West Virginia's lead park ranger, signing off.